Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Thursday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Joel Elkanen and Dennis Dick. At the top, everyone, apologize for any gremlins on today's show. It is so cold that my car didn't start. So I'm here in my house, and I think we're good to go. We got earnings. We got the Fed. We got Deutsche Bank merging, we got Tesla, and let's roll with it. So Joel, tell us what's happening in the overnight session.
Yeah, Spencer, you had the echo there. It wasn't me. I just want to go on the record there. But anyways, the futures are up nearly 3 points here. Overnight high, 91.75. Overnight low, 81.25. That high coincides with your December 12th high. The big target on the upside is 2713.75. Crude down 2 cents, but still over 54. Gold up a whopping $13 at $13.2860. Silver finally clears $16, up 20 cents at $16.13804. Let's get going with some earnings, Spencer.
Facebook, I guess, is that where we're going to start this morning?
Yeah, definitely. Go to the big dog, the stock that is unbelievable here. Go to Facebook. Give me those numbers here. I'm pumped up.
Wow, you're pumped up. What a quarter. Q4 EPS, $2.38 versus a $2.19 estimate. Nice beat there. Sales, $16.64 billion versus $16.41 billion estimate. Nice beat there. Their DAUs, daily active users, 1.52 billion. Those were in line. Monthly active users, 2.32 billion, also in line. And then the big number for this quarter, their average revenue per user, ARPU, just lost the number, but that was a huge beat on that estimate for the ARPU there. And so that coupled with the EPS beat, coupled with the sales beat, and that's a booming quarter.
And that's a booming stock. I don't think anybody saw this move coming. What was that? Do we know what the expected move was? I didn't jot that down, but if anybody in the chat, I would have thought, you know, and I never looked at any options, but I would have thought like, you know, maybe $5-6. I guarantee you at 17, there's some straddle riders that are probably getting the beats on this one. $168.55. I've still got this one in my long-term portfolio. It might not be there for long, though, because when you think about this, this is a big move. We were 123 1 month ago. Now we're $168. What is the math on that, Joel? You can do your percentages back. That's like 30% a month.
A lot.
We'll just say it's a lot. Expected move with 7% is what Griffin's saying, I think.
Wow. You know what? Maybe not.
He was talking Tesla.
Okay. Boy, I'll just give you your pre-market high. That turned out to be a pretty good level in Apple yesterday, as it took a while for it to get through that level, but it did, and Apple is where we at with Apple now. We are continuing on that path. Your pre-market.
How the hell did we go to Apple?
No, because I was using...
I want to know this tangent, Joel. We go on tangents, but we're talking Facebook, and all of a sudden, Joel's giving Apple levels.
What? Okay.
You got to take your pill this morning, Joel.
You need to go back in your cage, man. I'll tell you. We're going to have our first...
Take your pill. We're talking Facebook. Okay, well, how did you start talking about Apple?
Well, okay. If you'll be quiet for a minute. Jeez.
All right.
You can tell when Dennis is up money. He's not... whining and everything.
You're right. I'm in a better mood today. My mood swings with whether my P&L is swinging. Anyways.
Okay, so what I was saying was the pre-market high in Apple yesterday was a very good level. It took a long time for Apple to get to that level, but if you were patient and you held out for that level, it exceeded that level and went past it. So now I'm looking at the pre-market high in Facebook, and that comes in at 169.68. So that is a potential target on the upside. If it takes that out, then 170, who the hell knows where this thing's going. I just will tell you on the weekly chart, you do have some highs in the $170 area. 171.77 was a high back at the end of September. So that is how I made the jump from
Apple
back to Facebook.
So you're telling me I'm long Facebook. I'm long it actually both a little bit as a swing trade and in my long-term portfolio. So I'm long in two places. I'm definitely dumping the swing trade today. It's gone. Now, the question is, am I dumping the long-term investment too? Because FB168, it's a big move. Why? Because it's up 30% a month.
What do you always say about your investment portfolio?
I know. I'm not supposed to look at it. I'm not supposed to even log in. So I'm just supposed to ignore that. Maybe I'll hold the long-term stuff. The short-term swing thing is going to be gone, though. But long-term, yeah, I think I might hold it.
And I just want you to know that William Lay in the YouTube chat was following my Facebook rant. So I just want you to know at least one person in the chat was following on that. But we got a guest at 8:15 today, so let's roll into some more earnings. And, man, GE should have missed by more, Dennis.
This is the market that we're in. You miss, it's good news. You beat, it's good news. You miss, it's good news. I mean, I was there at 6:30, the numbers came out on GE. I was sitting at my desk. And I look, and I'm like, it's a flat-out miss. And the stock was trading actually like 9:20. So I could have shorted it actually up a dime at 9:20. And I looked at that, and I thought about what's been happening. And I was like, nope, not shorting the stock here on a miss because we know what this market does. And anyways, it went down to like 907, 905, and then buyers started to emerge. The old buy the dippers come in, and here it is, $9.75. Can I just say, I don't always call everything right, but I called the 666 bottom. I got this one right, guys. So I think it's official. We can say I was right on this one.
Yeah.
666 up 50% from that low now. But in any regard here, it's amazing that these companies, you know, continue to rally, some of them on disappointing numbers. So expectations are so low for GE, even the earnings miss doesn't matter. Stock trading up 7%.
Well, their sales did beat the estimate for whatever that's worth there. But the Q4 EPS, 17 cents, missed the 23-cent estimate. Sales beat, like I mentioned, 33.28 versus $32.6 billion. So an overall mixed headline number there for GE.
But let's put it in perspective. If GE would have reported this quarter 1 month ago, the thing would be down 70% right now. It's all just about confidence in this market. This market knows it's got the Fed's back. Trump is tweeting congratulations on the S&P move. I mean, everybody is just behind a bullish market here. It is so hard to be a bear when you're fighting the Fed, when you're fighting Trump. When you're fighting just now, everybody's got the buy the dip mentality back on. So, like I said a few days ago, I put the buy the dip hat back on. And you know, despite me being underinvested in my portfolio, which I obviously wish I wasn't, I think we're just slowly going to keep grinding here. I mean, there's no reason to think we're just going to tank overnight. Can we have some trade war concerns? Can Trump get tougher all of a sudden, maybe, with the trade war stuff? Maybe, but I think any blip down gets bought anyways, too. I mean, everything that was happening bad in December has been completely forgotten 20 trading days later. It's absolutely incredible.
Pre-market high. What do you know? 9.99, currently trading at 980. Boy, oh boy, this is going to be Dennis. I mean, can you see anything in the book this early? I mean, can it actually?
Well, it's got to be 10 bucks.
Yeah.
We don't even have to think. I bet you there's a bazillion shares for sale at 10. I'll go to the book. Let's go check.
But what about between, nine, where did we close yesterday? What about between 9:10 and where we're trading now? I mean, there's...
Yeah, there is. The one consideration here, though, it's traded 10 million shares already this morning. This is going to trade 25 million before it opens. Yeah. That will chew through everything in the book kind of volume. And this is a good exercise. We've talked about this before. It's nice to look at the book, but when you get this kind of volume in a stock, the book almost doesn't even matter. So yes, 10 is still going to be a psychological level. Yes, 10 has 430,000 shares that I can see there for sale. It's already trading 9.7 million. So that's like 4% of the volume, pre-market volume only. So, I mean, it can chew through anything. But if you're just going off the psych levels, I would say let's see what it does at 10. It looks like that's where it wants to try to go to.
What about trying to buy it, Dennis? I mean,
No. Don't chase. I don't chase.
I mean,
stocks up 7%, I don't chase it. I mean, it has worked in some cases here as of late. It's been paying you to chase stocks. I don't chase stocks. That's just my own stuff. long run, I think you lose money if you're chasing stocks. Yes, there is time and a place that, you know, maybe it works, but more often than not, it doesn't work. Stocks up 7%, I'm not buying it.
Look at that. That thing got almost back down to the 09 low. I believe, what was the 09? That was actually 573. We got to 666, as Dennis mentioned. Trying to have the second green monthly candle, so that's a big thing. If you're just a monthly trader, look at your November high. If you're looking for another target, 1023, that was where we came hard off the $13 level. So you want to sneak one more report in there, Spencer?
Microsoft. It'd be Microsoft.
Sure. Microsoft, that's where he wants to go.
Or
okay.
Go Tesla, one or the other. Well, let's save Tesla. I got some rants on Tesla. Yeah, well, I can't do Tesla in 1 minute. Yeah, I can do Microsoft.
You can't do any stock in 1 minute.
Yes, I Microsoft Q2 EPS $1.10 beat by a penny. Sales 32.47 versus 32.49 billion dollars. So a slight sales miss and a slight EPS beat for Microsoft.
Microsoft is a completely different story. You're talking about a stock that's like 4 or 5% off its all-time highs. It's never been beat up that much. So it's not going to be that, oh, buy it no matter what type of scenario, because it hasn't been beat up like the other ones have. So they miss on sales. Not surprising that it's down. I'm not sure this one's coming back. I mean, buy the dip has worked on multiple things, so I'm not going to fight it. I'm not going to sell it in the hole here. 102.17, the low from the 29th. That's my little rant on Microsoft. I did that in 25 seconds just for Joel.
Below that 102.17, you got a pair of lows at 101. Coming back on the upside here, we are filling the gap from yesterday. So if things get really, if they decide just to buy the daylights out of it, you really don't have much until the closing price of 106.38. And it's funny, during the market meltdown in December, I was shorting a bunch. And I had this thing short on stuff. And, I mean, it went down, and I made some money on it. But it was like, holy Toledo. It was just like the way it was going down. It was like you could just feel the bids in there. So
it didn't really want to go down. I mean, it was fighting. It was resilient all the way. Everything got rocked. Think about Nvidia getting hit down 50%, and Netflix getting rocked and clocked down 100 points. Amazon down 600 points. Microsoft sat there and fell like 7-8%. It was very, very resilient through December.
Okay, Spencer, what do we got coming up here?
Our guest for the day, James Putra, Director of Product Strategy and Innovation at TradeStation. We're going to switch gears for a minute with this segment, but we're going to find out about what they're working on down there at TradeStation in Florida. So we'll be right back in a moment here with Mr. Putra.
Welcome back, traders and investors, to Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Joel Elkanen here with Dennis Dick and Spencer Israel. And we are joined by a special guest here. We have James Putra from TradeStation. Don't tell me how the weather is in Florida, okay?
Without a doubt. I'm just hoping my friends up in Michigan are surviving. My family up in Chicago are about 140-degree weather difference, so they're really feeling it today.
Right. I heard it was minus 50. With the wind chill in Chicago yesterday. Is that right? Was it minus 50 with the wind chill?
That's what my dad's telling me. I mean, that's pretty brutal. That's like Arctic temperature. You need a full ski mask to go outside.
Yeah, and you want to know the cool thing? I heard Antarctica. I'm not sure. My wife told me this morning. I said Antarctica has 28 degrees today. Go figure that one, eh? We sent them the warm weather and they sent us the cold weather. Anyway, that's right up.
All right, James, before I delve in your topics for today, I mean, I just want the general mood at TradeStation there. You guys see a lot of the order flow trading in November and December and for part of January. I mean, did you notice like a big surge in trading where people, just bailing out of the market? Were they buying the dip? I know it's hard to talk about individual stocks, but, being a brokerage firm, you get these kind of days, where you have, people potentially, blowing out and stuff. What was just the general trading flow there at TradeStation?
So I think I can't comment on the brokerage at this point. I'm now employed by TradeStation Crypto, but overall the mood is pretty positive between us and the clients, like TradeStation itself. We have seen a lot of activity and a lot of still interest. People are still getting in the market, opening up accounts, and But my main focus is on the crypto markets at this point.
All right. Well, let's run with that here. We've had some discussions over the years and, you know, regarding crypto here. It had its craze a little bit over a year ago. But you're still on the crypto bandwagon here. Talk about the recent press release from TradeStation regarding crypto and what you guys are offering.
Sure. I mean, it's pretty interesting for us. We see a lot of potential in the marketplace, and we've got a lot of different demand from the customer base around trying to get access into the crypto spot markets. I don't know if you guys have engaged at all, but it's not really easy to find a firm that's very well known to place your money with. And so that's one of the things that we see that the brokerage space is going to change when TradeStation comes in. So we're launching a crypto spot markets that's going to be customer can trade crypto spots, they can trade futures, they can trade equities. And so what we think we're solving is the ability for customers to not have to park capital at multiple different venues, and they can park it just with TradeStation Securities or TradeStation Crypto and be able to engage in both those markets simultaneously.
Will they be able to trade like all the cryptocurrencies or just the main ones there, James?
So we're focusing on five. We haven't released the list yet, but they're going to be the five of the more liquid ones that you're very familiar with. We really see that kind of the nice combination between the futures and the spot markets is where we're trying to carve out our niche.
All right. And so retail brokers, they're saying that $2.2 trillion U.S. dollars of client assets are entered between the big three retail brokers. But, I mean, there's not much trading action here. Talk about, you know, what's going on. Is this just a long accumulation phase? And what's going to kickstart? I don't know if you just want to call it the Bitcoin or the crypto market. I mean, it seems like it's dead money to me, James.
So, I mean, I think to be fair, this crypto winter is fairly common. I think it's the third time we've had this now. It's a time when all of the hype blows off and we really get down to brass tacks and get stuff done. It's provided a lot of cover. I mean, unfortunate for the people that have been investing on the high 20,000s, but it's really allowing us to shake out a lot of the noise and maybe the less sophisticated or less stable projects. The number you mentioned, 2.2 trillion, is pretty interesting because when you look at Fidelity, Ameritrade, and TradeStation, we're the three big brokers that have expressed interest into the space, and it should change the dynamic of what ways customers can access the markets. When you look at our three firms, we're not wholly dependent on cryptocurrency as the main revenue stream. So it allows us to look across a variety of different avenues to monetize the business, but also our whole focus is around providing customers access to markets. So we focus on tools, research, quality, execution, and market structure. So we should see a lot of advancement in the space and make it much more accessible to the mass markets. And what we're seeing is that while you have a group of crypto enthusiasts, it's roughly 8% of the U.S. population that has ever touched cryptocurrency, there's a huge upside potential that people could access it. If you just look at the comparison between the U.S. equity markets, 54% of the population have ever touched equities in some fashion, whether that's mutual funds, stocks, ETFs. That's probably the top side that you'll ever see for cryptocurrencies. And I'm not saying that it's going to get there, but we have some room from 8% to 54% to grow. And allowing firms like the three brokers we mentioned, you have NASDAQ is involved in providing surveillance to the different cryptocurrency exchanges. The CME, the CBOE, they're also involved. There's new projects coming out like BACT and ErisX that are going to be more regulated exchanges. It's going to provide a more mature market structure that should help us kind of behave in the markets and engage in the markets in a way that all of us on the call are familiar with, like something closer to a national best bid and offer, something closer to understanding you can trust the counterparty and not worrying about somebody just up and disappearing with your money. So that kind of stuff is going to help the mass market retail get involved. And then we're also seeing, as you have more options and other derivatives contracts like futures come out, it's going to allow larger players to get involved as they can offset some of the risk in their portfolios. Interestingly, I think we talked about mining last time that we were on the call. What we're seeing is this kind of evolution of these highly technical people that have built these mining operations that are basically sitting on hoards of cryptocurrency, and they need to find ways to monetize these. So they're looking at instruments like the futures instruments, potentially some the accredited investors products like crypto options to try to create some cash flow on those crypto holdings.
James, what about for people like me, for example? So the vast majority of my exposure to the markets is via ETFs and mutual funds, and you sort of already kind of answered my question, but I'm really only interested in cryptocurrency if I can get it via an ETF or a mutual fund, and I know that the big institutional money is there with me. When will that start to develop?
So we're hoping very soon. I mean, that's going to provide a much more secure way for people to access the markets. So if you saw Gemini, they just announced that they're SOC 2 compliant, which is putting them down a path to get an ETF launch. So it's not clear whether they're going to be the first or one of the other main ETF issuers will be there. But there's activity happening that is moving the regulatory framework in a way that we can start to see more of these regulated products that will be accessible to mass market.
James, I mean, everything needs a catalyst. Stocks have earnings and they have fundamentals. They have mergers. They have acquisitions here. I mean, there has to be a catalyst here besides, you know, just the hype. Where's the catalyst coming from to kickstart Bitcoin on the upside?
So that's a good question. I don't have the right answer for that one for sure. What I'm looking at is the amount of interest that's interested in getting into the market. So just that $2.2 trillion is going to drive more participants in the market. You should start to see more mature market structure that should allow more people to come in. And so this is what we're keeping an eye on, is that's sort of driving the interest and the flow into the market. And because they're fairly set in size, it should help to drive some of the volatility up.
Just one more question, James, before you go. Right now, obviously, you know, through the equity, or we can trade the futures, the Bitcoin futures. Mm-hmm. How is your potential system there at TradeStation going to be different than just trading Bitcoin futures?
So the Bitcoin futures are cash settled. They're fantastic contracts because you really are not taking on that underlying risk of actually having to secure a token. So what we're going to be able to do is provide access to spot markets now. So the spot markets mean you can get direct access to the underlying asset class. So instead of trading a cash settled future, you can actually engage with Bitcoin itself, and you can take custody of that Bitcoin. You can trade that Bitcoin through our liquidity pools, which will provide you access to a number of different liquidity venues. I think part of the other question that you had is there are a number of crypto-related stocks that you can get into now that are not direct, let's say, Bitcoin holdings, although there are some, but you can get involved with some of the bigger name stocks that have big blockchain projects like IBM, Microsoft, Amazon. Almost all financial institutions have them. There's some mining companies out there. But there's a number of different firms that are focused in this space that you can play through traditional equity markets.
James, a couple of quick questions for you. One main one. I think the impediment to the volume in Bitcoin futures has been they have to be fully margined. Is that still the case, and do you see that changing anytime soon?
They're not fully margined at this point. I think we're doing 60% margin. Our TradeStation Securities is doing 60% margin on the CME contracts. It's actually a really interesting way to get access to the market because so CME is a five Bitcoin contract. So you're really only paying 60%. So it's like you're buying 3.5 Bitcoins through the futures contract. So you can control 5 Bitcoins with about 60% of the money. So you have a little bit of leverage if you're going to trade the futures. It is a sizable contract. Now, with Bitcoin down at $3,000, it's much more attainable than Bitcoin at $20,000, where you'd be looking at a $100,000 position versus, like a $12,000 position.
And if people want to learn more information about TradeStation and the crypto platform, what's the best way for them to do that?
So we've launched our wait list right now. You can get on that by going to tradestationcrypto.com. Please join us. We'd love to communicate with you and share more about what we're doing and give you access to the markets.
We've been on the line with James Putra. He's Director of Product Strategy and Innovation at TradeStation, working on new ways to get the retail investor and institutional investor into Bitcoin and the cryptocurrency market. James, a pleasure as always. We'll be speaking to you again soon.
Thanks, guys. Stay warm.
Uh-huh. Not going to happen, but okay.
There's no way to stay warm.
Did you guys come to the cannabis conference?
Sorry, what?
Did you go to the cannabis conference?
Yeah, James, I was there. I missed you there.
Man, next time we got to connect.
All right. No, all right, next time. Have a good one, man.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
All right. Thank you. Down a half a point here, starting to leak in the S&Ps. We got imbalances coming in a few seconds here. Triple D, I'm so busy here running the charts, running everything. Is there something that I missed while we're declining here a little bit?
Yeah, well, and this was a tough market to trade after hours because you had Facebook up substantially, which obviously helped FANG, like the Amazons and Netflix was trading up and Google was trading up significantly. But then, and they still are. But then you have Microsoft, and Microsoft is a huge component. Obviously, it's in the Dow. It's if you on the XLK, if you're looking at that ETF, it's 18% of it. It's a huge chunk of the Qs. So when you have Microsoft down and Visa also trading down, I know MasterCard's going the other way because they had decent numbers. You got some pressure in Tesla. You have a very mixed market from a lot of these earnings reports here this morning. So that's, you know, who is going to win? That was really the question here. So we've been kind of trading up 4 or 5 handles here this morning, but it's been slowly leaking. And the Dow has been trading down continuously because of Visa and obviously Microsoft both being components. But, you know, now we get some, you know, we're getting some employment numbers here, obviously, so that's going to bounce us around a little bit more here. But it wasn't a slam dunk. All I'm saying is it wasn't going to be a slam dunk that we were going to go higher here today because of Facebook, because you had some pressure from some other stocks out there.
Also, let's, before we get to the parade of earnings reports, two things I want to cover with you. One was you were talking yesterday about how stocks had to, some stocks had to be sold yesterday, right? Because of the Qs. And, man, I know you called out Walmart. Were you able to catch that stock at all?
No, I missed it. I called it out after the fact. But in a lot of the Qs, those non-tech components we were talking about, like Comcast, there was about 80% of them got hit. I actually got short Starbucks, too, and that one did not work. Starbucks went the other way. So I made good money in Comcast, lost some money in Starbucks. It's hit and miss on some of these because obviously it all has to add up at the end, the math. But they don't always hit every defensive stock. And for whatever reason, they decided to buy Pepsi and Starbucks yesterday pretty hard off the open. But if you're just looking and you're looking for a catalyst yesterday on why Walmart was trading down, and the media will always dig and find something fundamental to talk about because they don't want to believe that there's other reasons the stocks go down except for fundamentals, which is, you know, not the case. Walmart and Disney were weak yesterday, and you had a lot of other components in the Dow because simply Apple, Boeing, and McDonald's were up too much. They were up, and the Dow was trading higher, and we know that. But it was basically Boeing, McDonald's, if you do the math, Boeing, McDonald's, and what was the other one that I said? Who's the other one that reported? I'm forgetting now.
Walmart?
No,
Walmart went the other way. Boeing, McDonald's, who's the other big winner yesterday?
Apple?
Yeah, Apple. They were just too much of the Dow gain. So they were almost the whole thing. So you knew some components in the Dow. If the Dow is going to continue to trade at the price it's trading, some stuff's got to be down. So they picked on, obviously, stocks that were not tech because Apple was pulling tech stocks up. And they were picking on stuff that, you know, that wasn't, you know, related to any of the stocks that were trading higher. So they went and picked on Walmart. They went and picked on Disney. They went and picked on Travelers Group. They picked on a bunch. And if you look, well, look at the chart from yesterday. Show the intraday chart from yesterday, Walmart. It opened flat, and it puked $2 straight. And that's just simply a lot of ARB adjustment there. They're quickly adjust. And sometimes you see these prices, and you know, a lot of times you see wicked moves, you know, from where the stocks open and where they are, you know, 20 seconds later. And that's because the arbitrage is coming into play. In the pre-market, you can't run the entire ARB because there's not a lot, you know, you can run it, but not all the stocks are open. Once all the stocks are open, the systems can go full in. And if there's stocks that are out to lunch, they will put, obviously, they'll do the whole, you know, buy the 500 stocks in the S&P and sell the other ones against it if the arbitrage is there. So there's always adjustments happening, and that's why you see these wicked moves sometimes. And that's always existed. That isn't something new. It's always existed. The one thing I will say, though, because we continue to get more and more ETFs on the market, you see more and more of these moves because, for instance, before we had the XLK, you know, you might see differences there. But XLK is, you know, huge with Microsoft. So that has influences as well. And, you know, logic says that, oh, it's always the stocks that add up to the index price. You know, you add up, you know, take the 500 stocks and then you just get the index price. But because the ETFs are tracking the index and they are freely traded, it's kind of like a push-pull thing. where sometimes, you know, and you would totally agree with this, Joel, think about the S&P futures. I mean, there's people that believe that just the 500 stocks add up to the S&P futures. Well, you know, in some cases, the S&P futures push the price of the stocks as well. And maybe in more of the cases, the S&P futures push the price.
A lot of your trading is just capturing that inefficiency.
Exactly. So the bottom line here is the arbitrage with all the ETFs that keep coming on board is controlling the market way more than a lot of people would like you to believe. And that's just the truth. I mean, I do the ETF arbitrage. I've done it for a decade. So that's why I know what I'm talking about. I do this every night. So I'm doing it with a little bit of a guessing game, because when you're doing it after hours or in the pre-market, you can't just, you know, do all the stocks. So because they're not all open, you know, if you're doing the S&P 500, well, there's 400 stocks that don't really have a market. But, you know, if you get those top 10, it's going to track it to like 95% probability. So that's where, you know, you can try to, you know, take a little bit of, you know, you're not doing the R perfect, but you're still employing it just with a little bit of risk. Because, you know, it might just be that, you know, the other 490 are going to kick your butt or something, you know, and it's going to be the wrong way. But 9 out of 10 days, when you get the top 10 components on the S&P and you short SPY against it, it's going to track pretty closely.
Dennis, a couple quick questions here. Do you play straddles on earning stocks?
No. I wrote Apple? I don't trade options anymore, guys. I hardly trade options. And I traded options for years, so I do have some experience trading options. I traded a lot of options back in the mid-2000s, so going back a decade ago. I'm just more of an equities guy, and yes, there's still money. And I still watch the options market, because you got to know what the expected moves are. You got to know where, if you know where there's big open interest, the equities can turn at those points. You know, so it's still important to watch the options market, even if you're an equities trader. But I'm not actively employing option strategies. I'm doing other things. And you know what? The liquidity sometimes on some of the smaller stuff isn't there in the option market. It is in the big stuff, but you know, for the small stuff, I'm with Bright. I don't need money. I mean, I always think options is a leverage play.
Yep.
When you don't have enough money to employ the strategy you want to employ. Well, with prop, it's different. I have the money that I want to employ, so I don't need the options. If I'm bullish a stock, I'll buy it. If I'm bearish a stock, I'll sell it. You know, yeah, you know, if you can, you know, go trade the options and you can do some different things, obviously. You know, you can say, okay, well, I don't think the expected move on Facebook is going to be better than $9, so I'm going to sell the straddle. If you were selling that straddle, you'd be down 7 points here right now, because obviously Facebook has come back in, although it's leaking right now. But there's so many different ways, you know, you can employ good option strategy. So I'm not, you know, saying, you know, it's just I don't need to use options as much, and I stick with what I know, and I'm an equities guy.
All right, great question here, and we're just going to touch on it. I believe WildHog06 and then Google YouTube chat new. And how do you know if options pricing has been built into earnings? Well, it is. I mean, there's a lot of premium. I mean, I looked at the GE's GE 950s, just being curious of, or the nines I was looking at. They closed at 910. They went at around 50 cents for that option. So, yeah, you're making money on it. But if this thing is flat or goes down, I mean, you need 950 to make money on it. So there's a bunch of option symbols. We don't have time to go over now, but there's factors. And going ahead to earnings, they juice the premium. If you want to play options into earnings, try and get a lead on them. You know, because if you go the day before, they're just going to have them juiced up, and it's difficult. It's very hard.
You're always paying that, you know, juice. Value of the option at its very, yeah, the juice. You're always paying the maximum juice when you're buying them a couple days before the options. And yes, you know, it's a little bit less risk because you're not going to lose as much. But in the long run, I think you lose. If you're just an option buyer ahead and you're always trying to guess, even if you're right 80% or 70% or 60% of the time, and it's hard to be right even, you know, 60% of the time, the juice you're paying, I think, is going to eat away your profits. And what we mean by that is the premiums and the options are pricing higher for the expected, you know, event, which is obviously, and geez, touching $10 as we touch this, we thought it might go there, and we'll see what it does here if it's going to be a turning point. But, you know, 950 is your break even, like you said, Joel. If you just flat out bought GE at the close, it was 910. So, you know, you're giving up 40 cents of juice. Even though you're up 50 cents in the trade, you're giving up the other 40 cents because that's with the options. So I've always been a net. When I was trading options, I was always a net option seller. And that's why Nick Shaheen makes money all the time, is because he's a net option seller too. It's basically selling insurance to the market. And insurance companies are in business for a reason, because it pays. So in the long run, you know, it seems to work. The only thing is you've got to have enough money, if you're always writing insurance, to be actually pay out if somebody needs to get paid.
All right. And before we move on to the earnings report, yesterday I talked about, you know, the Fed meeting, and I talked about the end of the month today and the Fed number, the jobs number tomorrow. I thought it would be a little bit quieter day, flat day, or inside day in the markets. The Fed blew that proposition out of the way. But Dennis just discussed, it is the end of the month, best month since January of 2016 here. After the big decline, are we going to be dressing up or dressing down that portfolio?
That's a good question. And it could go either way. Maybe they're going to lock in a little bit. Some, you know, money managers could be locking in. But I tend to think usually you get a follow-through move. So if the month has been very strong, a lot of times at the end of the month, near the close, you'll actually get strength again. So if I was a gambling man, which sometimes I am, I would probably think that you're probably going to have a stronger close and a weaker close. But so many factors involved. I mean, we're watching the tape all the time, the news tape, to see what's Trump saying. You know, he was saying this morning that he's meeting with the president of China in the near future. I mean, that's going to drive the markets one way or another. You have major headline risk here on everything. Obviously, you know, we have earnings here. We have a few major ones after the bell, which is going to dictate a lot of moves too. We're going to get Amazon. It's going to be huge for the market here after the bell. I mean, Amazon moved up 82 points or something yesterday, you know, and obviously a huge day for it. But, you know, you're going to get a huge move off Amazon here again. So Facebook, you know, up $18 or $17 here this morning. There's major moves here during earnings season. So to predict, you know, where the market's going to be even an hour out is a very difficult task with so many variables and so many balls in play.
All right, Tesla. Earnings after the bell. I want to get to Tesla, guys.
I do, too.
Q4 EPS $1.93 versus a $2.26 estimate, so a miss there. Sales $7.23 versus $7.08 billion, so a sales beat, an EPS miss for Tesla. The Q1 delivery guidance they gave are going to be slightly lower than last year's Q1 deliveries for Model S, X, and 3, or Model S and X's on a year-over-year basis. They said they're continuing to produce Model 3s at maximum capacity. We'll see how long they can keep that up for. Free cash flow at the end of the quarter, which is a big number that matters for Tesla, $909 million there. They guided that they're going to get deliver between 360,000 and 400,000 cars in the year. And then at the end of that call, very end of that call, I know, Dennis, you were tuning in, the CFO is retiring.
It was kind of like, oh, by the way, so after we talk bullish on the stock for 30 minutes, we'll just throw this out. Oh, by the way, we're going to need a new CFO. What? You could have said that, like, you know, in the press release. You could have said that at the beginning of the call. But no, you drop it right at the end of the call after you've talked the stock up for 30 minutes here. I mean, we know the biggest risk to Tesla has is Elon Musk himself. The way he operates, the way he carries himself, the stuff he does. I mean, that was not, you know, it wasn't professional the way he did that. So, oh, by the way, oh, yeah, the CFO is retiring. What? What do you mean the CFO? This is like your second or third. When did the last CFO? How long has this guy even been on the job? Anyways, so that, then you saw the stock. It was trading at like 305, and it dropped like 15, 10, 12 points in a matter of minutes. Trade down 291. It has bounced back. It's only down 10 bucks here now. But, you know, this is why I can't stomach owning Tesla. I still love this story. I think the cars are awesome. The company is actually making some money apparently here now. You know, hopefully all the books are right. But, I mean, I can't stomach owning it because I don't know what this guy's going to do. I don't know what he's going to do next. He doesn't act in a professional manner. And that's why, you know, you see all of a sudden the stock fall 10, 12, 14 bucks. He would have done that professionally. Maybe he doesn't get hit as hard. He's always going to get hit, usually CFO leaving. That's, you know, they don't like that, especially on a stock like Tesla. But just the way he said it, oh, by the way, at the end of the call. He didn't say by the way, but it's kind of how it went down. You know, oh, yeah, oh, and CFO's retired. And that's the end of the call. What?
Big old range here in the pre-market trading. I'm just kind of going to stick to the trading range in this. 250, you're going back to, you know, late 2017. 250 to 350 has been one hell of a trading range. We're at 300, right in the middle here. I think my key level on the upside today, and we're 10 bucks away from it. You had a daily high at 308, and that was the day that they announced the workforce cut and 7%. You had a high that day of 308. The high yesterday ahead of the report was 309. So let's just round it off. Let's just call 310. It clears 310, has a chance. Coming back on the downside here, your three-day low comes in at 87.75. You may get a chance to trade that today.
I think if it ever got back down to the 250 area, there's buyers all over the place down there. I don't know. It's in the middle of it all here. Like a 298, I don't know. Yeah, you got 280, the initial support. I don't know what to
it's
say.
It's in the middle of nowhere.
I struggle trading the stock, too.
All right. Should we go to PayPal next?
Yeah, do PayPal. I mean, and again, we're in earnings season. 123 stocks reporting here today. So there's no way we can cover those in our one-hour show. So if you want to know a stock, if you want us to talk a stock, let us know right now here. Otherwise, we're going to pick what we want to talk about. So let's go PayPal.
All right, yeah. We saw the eBay pop and drop yesterday. PayPal, mostly just a drop yesterday. Q4 EPS, 69 cents was a 2 cent beat on the estimate. Sales missed, 4.23 versus $4.24 billion, the slightest of misses there. The Q1 EPS guidance that they gave was a little bit light. 66 to 68 cents was what they said. 68 cents was the estimate. Sales guidance they gave for the Q1, also a little bit light. Fiscal year EPS guidance in line. Fiscal year sales guidance in line.
I like the story still. I think the dip gets bought. I don't know where. Maybe it got down to 85. Maybe it gets bought sooner than that. I wouldn't be selling PayPal down $4.50, though, because I think the stock's still got a good story. Square is trading down with it. If you're wondering why Square is trading down, it often does trade with PayPal. And Square is trading down $1 here in the pre-market because they do move a little bit together. I often pair trade those together to a certain extent. The relationship's a little choppy, but there's definitely a relationship there. So when you see PayPal disappoint, it's not surprising Square is down as well.
We're hanging out too close to the pre-market low. For me to say the low of the day is in. Your pre-market low comes in at 87.28. And as I'm taking a look at the dailies here, I do see a little gap fill down to 87.55. So if your target was that gap fill, go right ahead and use that as a target for a short. Not sure about a potential long here at this area. 86.02 would be your next stopping point, and that was your January 17th. Low, so then that would be the low for the year. So a couple levels to keep an eye on here in PayPal.
Let's jump over Visa, MasterCard. One going one way, one going the other. We got Visa last night. It was disappointing. We got MasterCard this morning, and it was not disappointing. Maybe Visa lowered, you know, what the expectations were for MasterCard. But give us those numbers. Do them together. We'll do the technicals together.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't, at least from the headline, couldn't really tell what drove Visa down. The EPS for Q1 for Visa, $1.30 versus $1.25, sales 5.5 versus $5.4 billion. So beats on both the EPS and sales last quarter for Visa. And then this morning, MasterCard Q4 EPS $1.55 is a 2 cent beat. Sales $3.8 billion is in line with the estimate. So
it looks like similar reports.
You know, MasterCard is the one that they had a beat, barely a beat, and an in line. Visa beat nicely on both the EPS and the sales. So
they did see MasterCard on, and this I think was a catalyst here too. They see 2019 adjusted net revenue up low teens. So that's a big number there for it. CEO comments, very strong end of 2018. So they talked it up a little bit there too. So sometimes, you know, you got the, you know, obviously the bottom line, the top line, but sometimes it's commentary and sometimes it's that outlook there too. So it sounds like this up low teens net revenue is a catalyst to drive MasterCard up here this morning. I still own MasterCard in my long-term invest portfolio, although I sold part of the position, which I didn't wish I didn't do.
Okay.
Never sell in your long-term portfolio, I guess.
All right. Let's do MasterCard first. And you had a nice spike up here, trading up 774. Pre-market high comes in at 214.42. And, whoa, what is, I see a high. Wow, you're taking out a lot of stuff here. Is this, nope, not quite a new all-time high. man, if you want another target on the upside, folks, I don't have anything until 217.80, but we have backed off, so I will use that pre-market high as pretty good resistance. Coming back on the downside, if a big seller comes in here, they can knock this thing down to 207, 208 pretty easily here. So keep an eye on the pre-market high. Visa is trading down here. 135.20 is where we're hanging out. Important low in the pre-market, 132.63. Not seeing anything on the dailies here until 130.13. So if you're looking for more on the short side here, well, 134.04 was your Jan 7th low, but you drop off to 130.13 after that. S&Ps are falling under 26.80 here.
Going right on the SPY, too.
Yeah, GE, $10.13. Can it close as a double-digit stock for the first time in, I don't know, a couple months here? But we'll be keeping an eye on GE.
It's an impressive move for General Electric, not so impressive move for the market here this morning with the Facebook trading up as much as it is. But again, we just said there's a lot of stocks that aren't trading that strong here this morning, so not surprising. And, you know, you can look, and you know, we didn't fly through a lot of these, but, you know, RTN, Raytheon is trading down $5 here in the pre-market. You've got UPS actually trading up, which we should talk about because that's a big move for UPS. It's trading up $4.82. There's definitely a few. It's very mixed. I mean, we got 120 three stocks. You know, you look at Dow DuPont, it's down 8% this morning. That's getting the beats there too. So there's some major moves for stocks in both directions here today. When it all adds up, I guess you get a little bit of a choppy S&P. What about that Dow DuPont move? That's a big down move here, Joel. Down 8% here now. DWDP, they all loved it in the number. They were buying it up, and now they're giving it all back. What are your thoughts here on this one?
Well, you want Spencer to give the report?
Yeah, give the numbers, Spencer, sure.
All right. Dow DuPont reporting this morning just after 6 a.m. Eastern. Q4 EPS, 88 cents is in line with the estimate. Sales, $20.1 billion versus $20.92 billion. So a slight miss on the sales and an inline EPS. So not a – those don't scream, you know, great quarter, the headlines from Dow DuPont, but like I said at the top of the show, doesn't really matter.
And then let's go do UPS as well because this is going opposite direction and – up $5.
Right. So UPS, right. Dow DuPont down, UPS up is what I meant. So UPS, Q4 EPS, $1.94 is a 3 cent beat. Sales, $19.84 versus $19.99 billion. So a sales miss, an EPS beat for UPS. And they also gave some guidance for the fiscal year EPS that came in line. So overall, essentially an inline report.
The stock I always wanted in my investment portfolio, UPS. I've had FedEx in multiple times. I have FedEx in there again, one of the few stocks that I bought on the bottom of that day on the 26th. So happy I bought something, but I obviously should have bought a lot more when I was calling for the Dow 1,000-point rally. I did not think that 1,000-point rally was going to hold, which is why I didn't load up. And not only held, it continued to obviously go up from there, and that was the bottom. But UPS here, up 5 points. I'm not chasing it here. I do like the stock, though. 3.43% dividend as well. Ever gets back down near $100, I might take a shot at it again.
You do have a pre-market high over 107, but my focus is 106.40. That was your December 11th high, so 106.40, see if you find some sellers there. If not, your pre-market high comes in at 107.50, and then the dailies don't give you anything to lean on if you're short this thing until you get to 109.34. That was your December 7th high. I don't quite see that in the cards today for UPS. For DWDP here, giving back a lot of its gains from the last 3 or 4 days, trading down 5 sticks. Pre-market low, target on the downside, 52.75. What do we got there? That's good with your dailies here because you had a pair, only one low at 52.23, but we've bounced a good couple bucks after that. I call 53 support, and then for minor resistance, the high of the rebound's been 55.35.
We didn't talk. Let's move away from earnings parade just for a second here. We do have a rumor this morning coming from CNBC. Discovery would like to sell. This is the rumor. Would potentially like to sell a CBS. So we got Discovery trading up. It got a good lift. I actually was able to make some money on this off this news when it was breaking there, and was able to pick some up and flip it. And I'm already out of it, so it was a quick trade just to scalp off the news. But Discovery here, DISCA and DISCK, both getting a nice pop. We haven't talked the media stocks in a while. The only one I have in my long-term portfolio is Lionsgate, and that's been a dog, although it's in a long consolidation period here right now. But DISCA, DISCK, what are your thoughts here as they are potentially in play?
Oh, man.
Yeah, so it's a nice lift.
Yeah, it's a nice lift. You just want to see these things, just, you know, more confirmation or denials, one or the other. So if you're in playing for it, the initial pop took it up to 28.81, clearing 28 bucks. I mean, that's an important hurdle. You had some highs early in the week, just under 28. So if you're trading it technically, holding 28, you got a breakout here. Coming back on the downside, up $1.26. I'm sure a lot of people that went home short this would like to see the close from yesterday. And what was your close from yesterday? Your close from yesterday was 26.74. So you got a while to go for a gap fill. But, you know, you hear these things, boom. You want to hear confirmation. You want to hear talks. You want a trading halt. You want to hear about it.
Yeah. And when the rumors don't materialize, they rock them. Yeah. And this isn't like CBS says we're interested. The race to CNBC said it was that Discovery is interested in selling potentially to CBS. So I don't know about this one either. Although I did play it. Like I said, I'm already in and out, though. So, you know, rumor breaks and you try to take what you can. And obviously, you know, it's come back down. I was selling this morning. I believe I sold on DISCK in the 27 handle.
Good for you.
So, or 26, no, I can go grab that. 26.80s, I believe it was where it was. So I took the quick buck.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's up. But again, this is just a rumor here. We saw what happened with GameStop. You know, there were rumors that they were interested in selling, and that didn't materialize. And this is a different story. I mean, Discovery's got a little better business, I believe, than GameStop. But holy cow, you know, the GME here, that's an incredible move. And it has not rallied at all. Last couple of days, interesting little double bottom there at 11.11. But holy cow, man. When news rumors don't materialize, it can get ugly.
Just for folks both in the pre-market prep chat room and the Google YouTube chat room, we're missing a lot of symbols today. So if y'all want to stick around, Spencer and I will stick around for another 5 or 10 minutes and just try and get you the news and just try and give you some easy technicals to follow on those stocks. So please stick around here for a few more minutes. 8:56. S&P's now down 2 sticks. GE back at the $10 level. Got to get green. Let's see what happens at the close here if we can rally. Pre-market high 91.75. Spencer, let's get a couple more reports in.
All right. We can go to let's go to Celgene here. Reporting this morning, Celgene Q4. Celgene.
They're getting taken out.
Were they the ones? Yeah, they got taken out. Forget Celgene.
Well, yeah, but it's Bristol Myers. It can still impact it. So it's not like it's a non-event. Because it's not a cash deal. It's a traded deal, obviously, with Bristol Myers. We know it's one-for-one with a partial cash deal. But that can have an impact on Bristol Myers as well. So if you're trading Bristol Myers, keep an eye on Celgene today. Those two obviously still trade together.
All right. Well, the Q4 EPS beat and the Q4 sales beat and the fiscal year EPS guidance was higher than estimates, and the fiscal year sales guidance was also higher than estimates. So beats and higher than estimates across the board.
It's not going to move much because it's, again, tied to Bristol-Myers. So you can keep an eye on Bristol-Myers there too. So no matter what it was going to do, it wasn't going to move much. But if you are trading it, I just keep an eye on BMY chart.
Yeah, BMY, major resistance, just over the $50 level. It really got tagged on that day where it made the announcement of Celgene. 44.30, that was the low of the move. You rebounded up to 50.50, boom, boom, call it 6-point move. I'll be interested to see what happens at 47.5 if you get a pullback on this. A couple lows at 47.10 and 58. And if you're looking for a clear breakout on the upside that they like the deal and everything, boom, close over $50 and gap to fill in the upper 51 handle.
Wynn Resorts reported last night. I just want to get this one in there, too, because I haven't talked casino stocks in a while. It's been a nice rally for Wynn here, too. WYNN almost hit $90.06 back on the 24th when everything bottomed. Back to $125 here. So just quietly rallied 30% as well over the course of the last month. Numbers, Spencer. Technicals, Joel.
$1.06 EPS versus $1.31 estimate, sales of $1.68 versus $1.57 billion. So a sales beat and an EPS, a rather large EPS miss for Wynn Resorts. So all in all, that's a mixed report. What's the stock doing?
Trading up your pre-market high. They got real excited on this one. They took it up to 127.78. So if you want a target there, all I could say is, we're trading at 124.78, and I see a high at 125 and change. So if you can take that out, that 124.72 was that high. Man, there's not much between 125 and 130 here, really, as you come with resistance. And if you want to figure in a longer-term move, this thing has a long ways to go to get back any kind of a decent retracement from the problems that Mr. Wynn had. It took a while to sell it off, but they finally did. 50% retracement, holy moly, that'd take you back 150, 160, but on the move today.
All right, Dennis, before we let you go, and as Joel mentioned, him and I are going to stay on, but any final thoughts for you today?
Just before, Discovery is not for sale. Discovery is denying the CNBC report here. We've seen this with CNBC. Got to be careful with CNBC rumors. And I think David Faber is one of the best connected ones. So when he says something, I give it more weight. But we've seen it before where I don't know if CNBC is jumping the gun on some of these rumors, but we've seen them not materialize more often than they have. So you get a rumor from Bloomberg, you get a rumor from Reuters that seems to have more weight than the CNBC rumors as of late. So you got to be cautious with those ones. I don't know if that's for just trying to get better, ratings here or what it is. Like I said, I love David Faber. When he breaks something, I feel like he's more connected and I give it more weight. I don't think this one came from David Faber, though. I'm not sure who it came from, but in any regard here, CNBC, so the headline is Discovery denies the CNBC report, says the company is not for sale. Still trading up. But rumor was denied.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's the thing. When you're doing those, you want to see the news, keep your eye on the tape. All right, Triple D.
Imbalances, a million to buy. We know that's off of earnings. They're mixed. The banks are weak here at this point. We didn't get a chance to talk to financials. If you're looking at your banks and saying what's going on, a lot of bad things happening for the banks here today. Deutsche Bank is getting killed over in Europe. It's down 5% here. Not only that, you got the TLT trading significantly higher. That's always bad for the banks as well. So a little bit of a double whammy. The market's not up much, so they got to sell something. JP Morgan down 1% here, or down 70 cents. Citigroup trading down 47 cents. Bank America's down 0.7%. Goldman's down a buck. Banks are looking weak here this morning, at least off the hop.
Yeah, I looked at that Bank America yesterday, and I actually had it as on the short side, and I was just, I kept thinking in my head, all right, Dennis says they're going to sell something. They're going to sell something. Maybe I hope they sell Bank America, and they did. And as the market was making a new high on the day, Bank America was making a new low on the day. So I wish I would have stuck with that short a little bit longer. Maybe we'll get a pop back unchanged. That would be resistance. All right, Triple D, we want to get a few more things in here. Thank you very much, and we'll be chatting with you tomorrow morning.
Okay, let's start off, Joel, with U.S. Steel. X reported yesterday after the bell, Q4 adjusted EPS of $1.82 is a 2 cent miss on the estimate, sales 3.69 versus $3.75 billion. So misses for U.S. Steel on both the EPS and the sales.
I'm just going to give you the pre-market low. Your pre-market low comes in at 2060, and that fills a little gap in there that you have. Right around the 20, fill the gap at 2036 here. So I'll keep an eye on that as support, 50 cents away. Coming back on the upside here, 2154, that could be some resistance for you. That was yesterday's low. That would fill the gap. But this thing's been trying to rally a couple times. I'm sure you have some shorts underwater here. So I think you find buyers here on this dip in U.S. Steel.
Let's real quick talk about Deutsche Bank. I don't know if you pulled the chart up there, but there was the report. I want to say it was from Bloomberg overnight that their considering a merger with Commerce Bank. Deutsche Bank has denied that that's their only option going forward, but let's quickly look at DB.
Oh, man, we've been talking about this stock on the show for a long time, trading in the red here. Now a lot of the price action has already been discovered in this, right, because it's trading in Europe. So you have a pre-market low of 878. When you go to the dailies here, it's just a real, real spotty chart. I mean, I would maybe see some interest from buyers if you got down to the 850 area. Pair of lows at 844 and 847, but just realize you are not, you know, trading the primary market in this. Price action, price discovery is already taking place in Europe.
Qualcomm reported earnings after the bell yesterday. Q1 adjusted EPS $1.20 versus $1.09. Sales $4.8 versus $4.9 billion. So an EPS beat and a sales miss for Q1 Qualcomm. Their Q2 guidance EPS was in line, and their Q2 sales guidance was in line as well.
All right. You've got a pop. The initial pop was up to the $52 area, 52 even. We have leaked since then, only 60 cents away. This thing has just gotten hit a lot of days. Even before that short report came out, I know this had been in the decline. 52. Let's just not only call that a number for today, but let's just call that the number for, you know, going forward here, because after the bad news, you really have not been able to clear $52. So like that, your next daily high comes in at 53. Your next daily high comes in at 53.57. But pair of highs going back just a few days, your 4 and 5 day high is 52. So that's my number for Qualcomm here. And a lot of people are asking about Ferrari here. That's a thinly traded stock. Did they have some numbers today?
I don't think they're out yet. Okay. I haven't seen Ferrari. I think they're scheduled. Let me check real quick. Are they scheduled for after the bell? They may be after the bell. I have not seen the Ferrari numbers here this morning. They may be out. I haven't seen them. They're scheduled for this morning. Yeah, I haven't seen them yet, so I apologize.
Okay, no problem.
For that. Where would you like to go? Let's go to... I just had one from the chat here, then I don't remember what it was. But let's take a look now at Flex. That's the one I was looking at. Flex reported earnings yesterday after the bell, Q3. EPS 34 cents versus a 30 cent estimate. Sales 6.9 versus $6.78 billion. So beats on the EPS and sales for Flex in the Q3. The Q4 EPS guidance they gave was in line. The Q4 sales guidance they gave was also in line. Stock trading up substantially this morning.
Boy. Did they have the big drop? Did the deal fall apart or something when it went from 11 to 7? I'm not sure what the news was on that day. You've been slowly crawling your way back. You got a pre-market high of 1085, but man, just look at those double bottom that you had before it fell off the cliff. 1088, 1090, another low at 1130. Man, a lot of people love to see this at $11. I would use that as a target on the upside. Pulling back, shorts are probably stuck on this one. I don't think we'll get to the top of yesterday's range at 934, but you can see on daily, nice gap filled 11 if you've been so inclined to wait for that gap to fill.
Did get a headline breaking at 9 that Intel finally has a permanent CEO. They named their interim CEO, Bob Swan, as the permanent CEO. Whether or not you think that suggests that they may be one thing or another, maybe considering a sale or not, but that's the news on Intel. They did not have a CEO, a permanent CEO for a while. They do now. It is Bob Swan. That was announced at 9 a.m. here. Also at 9 a.m., we had Fran was halted about 10 minutes ago, FRAN. The headline there is that they are exploring strategic alternatives. This is ticker FRAN. I believe the stock is still halted, but that's the news on Fran, strategic alternatives.
You don't have any strategic alternatives when you're an 83 cent stock. What are your alternatives? I don't know. Bankrupt?
I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know, but I'm just running through. But usually, so typically, you know, we end the show at 9. There's usually a deluge of headlines at 9 a.m. right when the show is ending. We had that happen a couple of days ago with NVIDIA. The headline broke right as the show ended, so we didn't get a chance to discuss it. And so I'm just kind of bringing you the headlines at 9 as they break. Let's do Charter Communications. We talked about Discovery. Charter also had earnings this morning, and they're up big. Q4 EPS $1.29 missed the $1.45 estimate. Sales of $11.2 versus $11.1 billion, but it doesn't matter, I guess.
Wow, you know, I'm not the greatest on high price stocks like this. Your pre market high is 323, and I just see a high just sticking out like a sore thumb at the 327 area. But we've already backed off the high. So think for the high of the day could be in there. If it got to 327, I'd even be more interested in a potential short. Coming back on the downside, since you hit that high, you've had a decline down to 317.35. Has been just the high of the last bracket. Just a slow leak here. Thin stock. Be careful on that one.
Someone asking in the chat for us to take a look at Netflix. Obviously did not report yesterday or this morning, but we'll take a look at Netflix regardless.
Okay. Netflix, I mean, it had unbelievable run ahead of the report, and you've seemed to have sellers here since the report filled one of the gaps from that major run up. This one I'll take a look at today because it's in an interesting area. You know, I'm old-fashioned with my technicals and just like to stick to basic things. You had a high of 358.95, call that 360. You had a low down to 318.60, let's call that 320. Boom, you're getting a 50% retracement here up to the 340 area. Really like to see it hold in here and go back up and test at 360. If, in fact, we cannot gather more momentum here, I'll be looking this to drift back down more towards that $320 area. S&P futures continue to leak here, down 375 at 78.75. If you guys are looking for support, I got only a one number here on the downside at 26.69.50. That is your daily pivot. GE back under $10 here at 989. Spencer, you want to do one or two more, or you want to wrap things up for today?
We can do one or two more. Would you like to take a look at 1-800-Flowers, also up big this morning, up 10% last I checked. FLWS reporting earnings this morning. Q2 EPS, 88 cents versus a 97 cent estimate, so a miss there. Sales of 571 versus 557 million, so a beat on these sales, a miss on the Q2 EPS. But they raised their guidance for the fiscal year. Their EPS guidance was raised by 6 cents from 38 cents to 44 cents on the low end of the range. That again is the fiscal year EPS guidance. Sales guidance, our sales growth for the year, excuse me, is 7-8% is what they see.
Is the only thing they sell flowers or they sell other things?
I couldn't tell you.
Okay. Well, let's see. Maybe it's the Valentine's Day play here. You had a big old pop up to 1560. Wow, so that'd be a big target on the downside. We've backtracked since then quite a bit. I saw former sellers at $14 here. This was back in November. So if you're looking to buy this on a pullback, $14 would be an area. And besides that, that pre-market high, I think someone just got a little bit excited on that. Don't know if we're going to get back to that elevated level today. I mean, going back on the weekly and monthly, I mean, you haven't seen let's see if I can go on adjust up my monthly here. I'm going back to 02. If you've been holding on to this thing since 02, it hit 1786 in January of 2002. So if you're really excited about this one, that could be its all-time high as well.
All right. As far as tomorrow's show, we'll be joined by Lydia Item Finkley. She is a Forex trader. She'll stop by 8:35 tomorrow. But that's going to be it for today's show. So thank you to our guest, James Putra. Thanks to all of you in both of our chats, both on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. If you missed any part of our show, catch our podcast. We're on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. Hope you guys had a good morning. Hope you have a good rest of your day, and hope you join us again on Friday. Have a good one.